Hello, everyone. Welcome to the August 21st, 2017 edition of the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the FFPC. I'm Anthony Amico. You can follow me on Twitter at Amixta. And my co-host, as always, is Heath Kruger, who you can follow at Heath K. Heath, how is everything?
Oh, it's going great. You know, dipping into the preseason DFS a little bit here and there. You know, I had a really good start following just the advice of you in my first really preseason go at it. Kind of brought me back down to earth the last slate I played, so I took this Saturday off. But yeah, it's been fun overall. Entertainment before we get to the, you know, see draft start here probably this week for a lot of people if they haven't been going already. And, you know, football's, what, 3 weeks away now?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I actually don't even really play in that many leagues anymore, like probably less than five. So it's like the draft season isn't even really that exciting for me. Like, I just can't wait for week one DFS. Like, I already have all my contests reserved. Like, I'm ready to rock, man. I just want to build some lineups and get going. Joining us today on the show is TJ Hernandez. He is the associate editor for 4for4 Football, the founder of Roster Coach, and a co-host of the DFS MVP podcast. You can find him on Twitter at TJ Hernandez. TJ, always good to talk to you, man. How's it going?
Good, man. Always good to be on RotoViz. Always one of my favorite pods. I'm glad you guys are holding down the preseason DFS. I'm just going to kind of sit back and watch you guys do that. The last thing I want to do is go into week one with a bad taste in my mouth. So I usually just chill, kick back, watch the games casually during the preseason and enjoy my last couple weeks of sanity before September comes.
Yeah, when it comes quick. And then we're basically just busy, busy, busy until the season's over. First news item this week, NFL Network's Tom Pelissero confirms that Jacksonville's starting quarterback job is wide open. TJ, Blake Bortles has been awful. There's really no way around that. But does Chad Henne improve this offense or any of the weapons at all for fantasy if he ends up getting this starting job?
I mean, I'm not surprised that the job's wide open, but I don't know that Chad Henne's necessarily improves the outlook, at least from a fantasy perspective of this offense. I mean, Chad Henne's been equally as bad as Blake Bortles throughout the course of his career. So it's going to be kind of a lesser of two evils. The big thing with this offense is it's a completely new regime. Tom Coughlin's over there. They brought in Doug Marrone, as he was the interim head coach last year, but hired him full time. He's a run heavy guy like Coughlin, and there's been reports that Coughlin's kind of been over his shoulder at practice, kind of putting his fingerprints on the team. And, we know how historically he kind of likes to play that conservative, run the ball game. And then of course they draft Leonard Fournette. So I think this team is going to see the biggest 180 in play calling philosophy of any team from last year. I wouldn't be surprised to see Fournette get 300 touches pretty easily. Historically, those running backs that are drafted that high, they're drafted with the intention of using them, and they usually approach that 300 touch mark. So I think this team's going to look a lot different. I think that both Coughlin and Marrone want to mask their bad quarterbacks. Marrone has a history as a play caller of doing that with his bad quarterbacks as the head coach in Buffalo. Had EJ Manuel, Kyle Orton, a couple other really bad quarterbacks that he coached, and he really kind of just wants to minimize mistakes and run the ball, and I think that's what we're going to see this year.
Yeah, it's one of those situations to where I think, you know, kind of like you said, they want to do something. They just really want to run the ball because they realize what they're in for with either quarterback option. For those of you who are thinking Chad Henne might be a better option, he's not. Any season where he started the majority of the games for the team he was on at the time, he had an AYA that was below six. Touchdown interception ratio was essentially, it was 50% or, you know, favor the interception side in every one of those seasons as well. This guy's been in the league a while, so I guess he's a veteran. He might slightly limit turnovers less than Blake Bortles, but he also doesn't offer the rushing upside of a Blake Bortles and at least the deep passing ability of Blake Bortles. So it's an unfortunate situation, but don't trick yourselves into thinking that Chad Henne is really any sort of significant solution. You're just going to have to sadly just kind of roll with Bortles, I think, and just hope for the best and hope that, you know, this young defense with all the talent it has and a rookie, you know, hopefully Dynamo running back and Leonard Fournette can kind of push you through to a, you know, a better time to where possibly more quarterbacks open up next year, as there should be a couple different good veterans hitting the market.
I think it's a real disaster for them if they decide to go to Henny. And I know that Bortles may be a broken man at this point, and the idea of him getting back to that 2015 form is probably completely non-existent. But if you just look at what Henny and Bortles have done career-wise, Bortles has a better touchdown rate. He's a better interception rate. He is easily the better runner of the two players, which I think probably matters the most when you consider what they want to do with that offense. So I'm not really feeling the move to Henny if that ends up happening. I do think that Jacksonville is going to try to go out of their way to keep Bortles as the starter, maybe give him the Hackenberg game plan in the next preseason game, just keep it simple, a lot of easy checkdowns, stuff like that. But it's almost upsetting because I feel like the one thing that can prevent a Jaguars breakout is bad quarterback play, and you know Jacksonville can't really seem to get away from that.
TJ, let me ask you this. You know, we didn't really project it to be a high-volume passing game by any means, or a quality one, but did you expect the level of play to be this poor from Bortles, and have you really kind of moved down any of the wide receiver options or tight end options in Jacksonville?
I mean, I didn't expect it to be this bad. I don't think you could ever really expect anyone to be as bad as Bortles has been, especially last year. I didn't really have anybody else on my board outside of Fournette and Allen Robinson. I don't want any of those ancillary pieces. Julius Thomas doesn't do anything for me. Hearns and Lee just aren't even options, even in deep MFL 10s. Allen Robinson is a guy that I'm going to look at depending on how my specific draft is going. If I'm getting him as a wide receiver 3 or maybe even as a wide receiver 4, if I go really wide receiver heavy and I'm in kind of a casual league where he's not going to go in the 3rd-ish round or something like that, I'll probably take him just because I think as an individual, he has a lot of touchdown upside regardless of who his quarterback is. I just think he's so good in the red zone. Even last year, his red zone rate numbers were still up in that really elite, like Eric Decker, Dez Bryant type tier. And I think he's just that type of player that's going to score at a really high volume close to the goal line. So he's going to be frustrating week to week. But again, if he's someone that's just in your wide receiver 3 or flex spot, that's the kind of player that could kind of boost those weeks when they do hit. And then if you're not relying on him, it doesn't hurt too much on those down weeks. So I'm still fine with Allen Robinson depending on what the first few picks in my draft look like.
All right, let's move on to the next news item of the day. Falcons.com's Kelsey Conway reports that the team has shown a real emphasis on getting Julio Jones more red zone touches during camp. TJ, Julio has scored more than 8 touchdowns only once in his career. Does that change this season? And where do you rank him among the elite fantasy wide receivers currently?
I still have Julio right behind Odell and Antonio Bryant, just from a talent perspective and from a draft perspective. I think the red zone and scoring thing with Julio is a little bit overblown. The last 3 seasons, he's finished 6th, 2nd, and 6th in PPR leagues. The issue with this offense is the offense is going to regress as a whole. They played way out of their mind. I think if you've been paying attention to any type of off-season chatter, it's pretty popular opinion and pretty obvious that this offense can't sustain what they did last year. Matt Ryan's touchdown rate was way over his career average of 4.7%, which is right at the league average. For his career, Julio scored at about 5%. So his volume's going to carry him. He's going to dominate targets in this offense. If he sees that 175 to 200 targets that we're used to and he could stay on the field, that touchdown rate still puts him at about 8 or 9 touchdowns. He's only scored more than 8 touchdowns once, but he scored 8 touchdowns twice. So we know how variable touchdowns can be from year to year, and Julio's going to be right around that top 5 fantasy wide receiver pretty consistently just because of that volume. So I don't have any problem with it. I mean, he's 1 year removed from seeing 22 red zone targets. The fact that they at least recognize that he's not getting looked at in the red zone, I think is fine. I don't think it's hard to add 7 or 8 targets to Julio in the red zone. They throw so heavily to their running backs in the red zone that you could reallocate those looks over to Julio pretty easily.
Yeah, I think that's the key for sure, is just recognizing that he's their best guy and they want to get him the ball more. I'm really expecting Julio to have a pretty big year. I think that some of that regression that we expect from Matt Ryan as a result of just being so outrageously efficient last year, I think that when he comes down, that's going to force him to key in on his best target a little more. I think last year being able to just spread it out and be successful, getting a lot of those big chunk yardage plays from Taylor Gabriel, being able to rely on a couple of these ancillary targets in the offense, I'm not really sure that's going to happen again. And I think that when, you know, the offense overall isn't running as smoothly, they're going to start focusing back in on number 11 and just going back to where Matt Ryan's bread is buttered. I really like that Sarkisian understands that. It's not really surprising to me at all. I mean, I think he's probably a pretty good coach. But Julio, for me, I think, you know, last year he was in the 140s in terms of a 16-game target pace. I think he's going to get back up into that 170, 180 range, that truly elite territory this year. And, you know, if he gets the touchdowns that come with that, that's great. But I think for sure Julio is locked into those top three wide receivers.
Yeah, you guys pretty much echoed all my thoughts. Maybe I just want to add one quick thing of just for the listeners out there who might be expecting a little bit of something outside of a potential just kind of like a volume play in best ball leagues with like a number two wide receiver on the Falcons. Just think of the individual talent we have. We have a Mohamed Sanu who, that year in Cincinnati to where he was the only option available. We kind of saw what Mohamed Sanu was, and it's not really anything you want on an individual target basis. Justin Hardy, we know who he is, and it's not all that great. And Taylor Gabriel as well. He was not some dynamo on the Cleveland Browns. He was just kind of like a decent deep threat. And that was just about it. That's all he offered. Unless you're hoping for some giant leap from in year two from Austin Hooper, Julio Jones is pretty much just going to have all the volume he could handle, I'm guessing, with the addition of a new offensive coordinator who's probably going to look at the talent on the depth chart and notice, you know, who's the guy who's going to be, who needs to be fed the most. And it's pretty clearly Julio Jones.
All right. Before we get into no shit, shit, no, just want to remind everyone, you can get a listeners only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our premium NFL content, and it supports the pod. You can also support the show by subscribing to and rating the RotoViz radio channel on iTunes. Do that, and you'll be eligible to compete against some RotoViz podcasters and writers in a $35 entry best ball league hosted by our friends at the FFPC. The winner of each league will receive a year-long RotoViz pass on top of the cash prize. Just go to iTunes, leave a review with your name in it, and then email us at rotovizradio@gmail.com. So let us know that you want to be in the RotoViz League, and we'll get that set up.
Hey, RotoViz fans. I want to take a minute to tell you about our friends at the FFPC, who are celebrating their 10th year as the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. If you love the best ball format, the FFPC has you covered. The popular FFPC Draft Experts Leagues start at just a $35 entry fee and go up to $1,250 for the high rollers. Drafts are filling fast, so you won't have to wait long for your league to fill.
As if that's not enough, the FFPC has introduced a brand new concept to season long. Double up best ball leagues with 100% payout. Yep, you heard that right, 100% payout. Simply draft in a $35 or $250 entry FFPC Draft Experts League, finish in the top half of the league at the end of the season, that's the top 6 teams, and you will double your entry fee for next year. Double up leagues are the best deal in fantasy, so get on them and start drafting. Don't miss the FFPC experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com. Join your fellow fantasy players today at the FFPC, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. Now let's get into no shit, shit no. First item up this week is Philip Dorsett. Appearing on the Rich Eisen show, the Ringer's Mike Lombardi reported that Colts wide receiver Philip Dorsett is available for trade.
No shit. I mean, this is kind of one of the worst draft picks we've seen probably in recent history, and it was from Ryan Grigson, who they got rid of. Seemed like they were pretty excited to get him out of there. I think a lot of people in the football community considered him one of the lesser GMs in the league. So now that he's out of there, it's no surprise that they want to get rid of one of his early round picks. Philip Dorsett is maybe fourth in the pecking order at best on this team, behind T.Y., Jack Doyle, and who am I leaving off the list there?
Don't take
Moncrief. Off Moncrief, yeah. So, I mean, he wasn't in line to really have much of a role in this offense anyway, so no surprise to me there.
E.J. Manuel. ESPN's Paul Gutierrez reports E.J. Manuel has taken a lead over Connor Cook in the Raiders backup quarterback competition.
No shit, and it really doesn't have anything to do with E.J. Manuel. Connor Cook is a player that last year they considered a first-round talent, but then after doing some background stuff, there was some weird Twitter stuff with his dad, and then he apparently just has a really bad attitude with coaches and teammates, and then couldn't even win the backup job over Matt McGloin last year. I wouldn't be surprised if all of those reports add up to a player that hasn't really been motivated or working hard, which obviously you have to do at the NFL level, especially as a quarterback. So again, something that really hasn't been surprising considering all the reports of who Connor Cook has been.
Amir Abdullah. ESPN Lions reporter Michael Rothstein believes Amir Abdullah will top 1,000 yards rushing this season if he stays healthy.
I might lose a friend in Heath with this one, but I'm going to go with shit no. This is an offense. Jim Bob Cooter wants to throw the ball a lot, and he's not game script sensitive at all. He's actually the least game script sensitive game play caller in the league. So whether they're behind or ahead, they're going to want to throw the ball. I don't think anybody would argue that Theo Riddick is going to be a big part of that. Obviously, their best pass catcher out of the backfield. And then not even just the 1,000-yard thing, but just the upside of Abdullah. I think there's a chance that Zach Zinner comes in, gets some of that short yardage work. And I think Amir Abdullah will be losing a lot of early down work when Detroit wants to throw in first and second down situations. So I don't think he's necessarily going to have the workload that we might think.
It's more Abdullah for me, I guess. Doug Martin, Buccaneers coach Dirk Cutter, says it's impossible to say if Doug Martin will be the starter when he returns from suspension.
No shit. If you follow Dirk Cotter as a coach and a play caller, he is a coach that likes to have multiple running backs involved. So at the end of the year, we always see Dirk Cotter backfields with really nice numbers as a whole, but he likes to use multiple guys. And one of those guys consistently wherever he's been has been Jaquizz Rodgers going back to his time in Atlanta. So if Rodgers is as good as he was last year in those couple of spot starts, I don't think Cotter has any reservation about leaving him in there and just kind of rotating Martin and Quiz, and then if Sims stays on the roster, Sims as well.
Devontae Parker. Speaking after Thursday night's preseason game, Jay Cutler called Devontae Parker a faster Alshon.
No shit. I mean, Parker coming into the league was his closest physical comp was AJ Green. We've seen Jay Cutler really he liked some of his best years were with Alshon and Brandon Marshall, so no surprise that Cutler is comparing Parker to Alshon. If we look at Parker's first couple years in the league, look at players with similar targets with a touchdown rate over 5% and yards per target over 8, he's kind of on a career arc with guys like Doug Baldwin, Martavis Bryant, Kenny Britt in that production range. I think people had really big hopes for Parker, and he hasn't been dominant. But if we just go back a couple years, kind of the general consensus is fantasy was we look for that third-year breakout receiver. I think we've got a little impatient with that recently, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Parker come on strong this year.
Matt Days. Speaking about seventh round running back pick Matt Days, Browns coach Hugh Jackson said he's flashed and is, quote, establishing himself as an every down back.
I don't see him jumping Isaiah Correll or Duke Johnson. I think this probably has more to do with the fact that the Browns have been talking about wanting to get Duke Johnson in the slot, and I think if that does end up being the case, then those series maybe that they put Johnson in the slot might be times where they're rotating days in with Correll. But we know Hugh Jackson is a coach that wants to run the ball a lot and get his running backs involved, so I think that if it is a situation where Duke is playing a lot of slot, then that's just Hugh kind of saying that he has another guy that he's going to be rotating in there.
Alex Smith, the Kansas City Star, reports that some in the Chiefs organization believe that Patrick Mahomes' presence has helped push Alex Smith to be more aggressive.
I mean, it's his aggression was zero, so it's not hard to be a more aggressive than zero. He's going to be the check down king in this offense. Knowing that they're really going to push the ball down too. So I think that's kind of them just talking a little bit. Alex Smith will never be in the same sentence as aggressive, at least for me.
Le'Veon Bell. ESPN's Adam Schefter confirms unsigned franchise player Le'Veon Bell plans to report to the Steelers before week one.
No shit. We see this with some high-profile player virtually every year, ping-pong between the organization and the agent. There's reports out of the Steelers camp that a contract was in place. Agents denied it. I think they're going to get something figured out with Le'Veon. They realize how big of a part of an offense he is. I expect him to be all systems go come the first week of the season.
Scott Tolzien. Colts OC Rob Chudzinski said the team will have to alter the playbook if Scott Tolzien is forced to start.
No shit. We've seen this offense without Andrew Luck before, and it is a disaster. And they don't have a competent quarterback on the roster behind Andrew Luck. So if for whatever reason, if that shoulder is a problem, they will dumb it down.
Jerron Brown. According to azcardinals.com, Coach Bruce Arians said Jerron Brown is the Cardinals' number two receiver.
No shit, only because after early season excitement where it sounded like John Brown was healthy, he came out himself and said he still has work to do to get back to full health. So whatever it is with a cyst on his back or his sickle cell, if the player himself is saying that he's not 100%, then I don't think the team is comfortably going to slot him in as a starter.
Mike Lennon. According to the Chicago Tribune's Brad Biggs, Mike Glennon remains the strong favorite to start the Bears' Week 1 opener against the Falcons.
No shit. They gave Glennon a decent amount of money, and I think that the plan all along was to draft somebody and have Glennon start at least early in the season. So I think that Glennon will at the very least get starts ahead of Trubisky, depending on how the season's going. If the Bears are losing a lot, Trubisky will probably get in late in the year, but not surprising to see them not want to throw their rookie into the fire and kind of destroy his confidence right off the bat.
Christian Hackenberg. Jets offensive coordinator John Morton has called Christian Hackenberg basically a rookie.
Have you guys ever had an easier no shit on the show than this? I don't think anybody expects much out of Hackenberg or this team as a whole. It was surprising that they even drafted him where they did in the first place. And then to have him on this talentless team that looks like they're pretty much punting the season. He should look like a rookie.
Darren McFadden. ESPN's Todd Archer thinks the Cowboys could use a committee approach at running back during Ezekiel Elliott's 6-game suspension.
No shit. Darren McFadden turns 30 next week. They added Ronnie Hillman right before the suspension went down, so I think the Cowboys kind of knew something was coming. Whatever you think about Hillman, they obviously wanted to add some depth. Alfred Morris is serviceable at best, but I don't think that the Cowboys are relying on McFadden to come in, carry the ball 20 to 25 times. I wouldn't be surprised to see them add somebody as roster cuts start coming through as we get closer to week one. So I wouldn't be surprised to see one more body added to that backfield.
OJ Howard. ESPN Bucks reporter Jenna Lane believes rookie tight end OJ Howard's early contributions will primarily come as a blocker.
No shit. I'm never excited about any rookie tight end. We've seen it year after year. It's a position that just doesn't produce early in their career. They have Cameron Brate there, who has been one of the more pleasant surprises at the position. They're plenty happy letting Brate hold down that red zone work and just using Howard in those two tight end sets.
Adam Shaheen. ESPN Bears reporter Jeff Dickerson believes second-round tight end Adam Shaheen will have a sizable role in the offense.
Shit, no. Kind of same thing with Howard. Rookie tight ends come along very slowly. He's still going to be behind Deion Sims, who they gave $10 million to. He's kind of a blocking tight end as well. Zach Miller has had a few splash games. There's rumors that he is going to be he could be a roster casualty, a cut casualty, as they trim down the roster to 53 men. But rookie tight ends don't come along very often, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of volume to be had in this offense anyway. So behind Sims and Miller, not expecting much out of Shaheen. And in that same report, they did say if he proves that he can block, so there was a little caveat there as well.
And finally, LeGarrette Blount. According to Matt Lombardo of NJ Advanced Media, it wouldn't be surprising if LeGarrette Blount is among the Eagles' cuts.
I'm going to go with a very hesitant shit no. He hasn't looked good in preseason, but I don't know what their plan is outside of Blount and Sproles. I know they have an undrafted free agent. I can't remember his name right now that they said has looked pretty good in the preseason. But, I mean, they signed Blount, kind of an awkward fit. Peterson kind of wants to get his running backs involved in the passing game. They did run a lot in the red zone last year, but I think that was more a function of them not wanting to put too much on Carson Wentz, who was pretty inefficient in the red zone last year. I think they're going to take the reins off a little bit more and be a little more pass heavy. I think Blount will probably still end up on the team, but a little surprised to hear those reports.
Yeah, the player you're thinking of, by the way, I believe is Corey Clement.
There it is.
But yeah, great stuff, TJ. We're going to wrap the show with a couple more regular news items. Item number 3, ESPN's Jordan Rannan believes that Shane Vereen remains a big part of the Giants' plans this season. Paul Perkins and Wayne Gallman certainly have failed to impress in this offseason, which leads to the question, TJ, is Vereen the best value in the Giants' backfield right now for fantasy?
I think so. Ben McAdoo comes from that Green Bay offense where they are really a pass-first offense. They run their offense through their wide receivers, and then the running back's kind of just a complement to that passing game. And the way that the Giants have built this team, the players they've signed, the players that they've drafted, it looks like they want to do something similar. And it's not a team that's going to focus on the run. I don't think that Ben McAdoo really cares if he runs the ball very often, especially if he doesn't have a running back that is impressive. And the reports are that Paul Perkins hasn't been great. So I'm pretty sure that McAdoo's fine having Vereen in there as a complement to the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just kind of a last-ditch effort at a position that the Giants have really not had really any luck with since, I forget his name, he used to be one of my favorite players, had to retire early due to a neck injury, I believe, early on in his career.
David Wilson?
David Wilson, yes. I think that was the last promising Giants running back I can think of. Paul Perkins. I have no idea why you would want another Paul Perkins, but apparently they wanted another one, so they went and got Wayne Gallman. I guess unsurprisingly, neither has really showed up into this kind of potential three-down role. So Shane Vereen, who's just kind of been a long-time staple in the league, he's always going to be around. He's always going to give you that you know, decent baseline receiving production out of the backfield. It's probably just going to be another year to where we're looking for a running back to emerge in the Giants backfield, and it's just going to be another year to where we really don't have anyone of any sort of relevance.
He's caught more than 3 passes per game over his 2 seasons with the Giants. Granted, it's only in 21 games, but that's pretty good value. And I feel like, especially in best ball, when you're just trying to fill out your running backs, even if you don't use a zero RB strategy, but I think especially if you do, Green's a really nice guy to add. Gives you the nice floor. I mean, we know that he'll never become a high volume rusher. His career high in rush attempts is 96 back in 2014. But even if he just gets like 50 rushes, maybe 200 yards on the ground to go along with a pretty decent receiving output, finds the end zone. I mean, he's caught in the last three seasons that he's played eight or more games, he's caught three touchdowns or more. So he is finding the zone enough where I feel like that is really quality production.
Before we move on really quick, I know it's kind of a tough spot to try to explain some of these picks, but I don't think you're fans of them, Anthony, but do you happen to have any idea as to why they would draft a Paul Perkins and a Wayne Gallman? What is it they see in these guys?
Well, the Giants just want to be bad. No. I think that they just have an affinity for the big school player who they believe can carry the load. And I think that that's what they think about a guy like Wayne Gallman. And, you know, Paul Perkins brings like that versatility that they got out of someone like a Rashad Jennings. And they really do love the guys from the Power Five conferences. So to get a guy from Clemson and get a guy from UCLA, like that just kind of fits their mold. That seems to be their MO.
Makes a lot of sense. All right, last news item to wrap up today. Right before the show, ESPN's Jim Trotter reports Anquan Boldin has elected to retire only 13 days since signing with the Buffalo Bills. I think it's quite easy to say it's a pretty surprising move considering, you know, just this short amount of time. TJ, what does this do to the Buffalo Bills passing game and offense really in general?
This is offense that I went from really excited about. Getting rid of Rex Ryan and Greg Roman is one of the best things you could do for any offense. But then they move Sammy and we're left with J-Matt Zay Jones and Anquan Boldin, who are all basically the kind of the same receivers, slot receivers, and now they don't have anyone to throw to on the outside. I guess Zay Jones is going to line up out there. We haven't seen Tyrod throw over the middle effectively in his career. Last year, they threw over the middle less than any team in the league by a pretty significant margin. I guess it's a little bit of a chicken or egg situation. They haven't had a good slot receiver, and Sammy obviously is an outside guy, but I don't think Tyrod sees those throws very well, so I'm pretty much off this passing game now. It just doesn't excite me anymore. I think they just look kind of lost in what they're trying to build, and I don't see how it translates to much fantasy value.
I'm just going to be the Bills optimist that I frequently am on this show. I love Tyrod. I don't really think who his receivers are, but it really matters that much. I mean, he was still a QB1 last year without Sammy. I think he could do that again. I think Jordan Matthews represents a player that's better than anyone he was throwing to last year over that time period. So I'm not really too worried about him, especially if he can continue to produce on the ground. I suppose that's probably the biggest X factor with his value. And I love Jordan Matthews. I think he's a really good player. I think that, you know, height, weight, speed, he's an equal to Sammy Watkins. I know that what he's done in the NFL hasn't been the same in terms of where he's produced his points. Watkins has been the outside deep threat, constantly making those plays downfield. Matthews has been operating almost exclusively out of the slot. But I wonder if this is just a situation where coaches have decided to utilize these players differently, but they're a little more interchangeable than we expect. And I think that the fact that they went out and traded for Matthews speaks volumes in terms of how they at least want to use him. So for fantasy, I think that Matthews is probably going to see a really nice chunk of volume, considering that Bolden's gone and the second best option right now there is a rookie. So I'm definitely targeting him in drafts. I'm sure that his ADP will adjust a little bit, but for the majority of the summer, he's been like a 7th, 8th round pick. And I think that's really good value for at least the opportunity that he's going to get with that team.
Yeah, I guess my concern is it's kind of hard to tell exactly what they're trying to do. This organization as a whole hasn't really been sold on Tyrod as much as like the Twitter community, I guess. So we were kind of talking about it off air. Like, are they even going to leave Tyrod in there as the season goes on? It's just hard from an outsider's perspective to see. It just kind of looks like a messy plan, if you will.
before we get off here, I want to just kind of really just bring up the point of really the elephant in the room here, LeSean McCoy. With this team almost taking an approach, much like the Jets, of kind of selling off their assets as a way to build in a long-term way, LeSean McCoy as a top five pick in a lot of best ball drafts, a lot of regular drafts that have been going on that have been conducted already. Is he a guy that you're even really considering? And, you know, considering a running back is so reliant on the offense, McCoy is coming off a season to where he was hyper efficient relative to his career numbers, you know, 5.4 yards per carry average relative to a 4.7 career average. We definitely think he has the talent, but, will he be able to, you know, score 14 touchdowns again? We know he's going to be a factor in the passing game. I guess we can project some decent volume, but I'm really worried about the overall scoring if this offense is going to essentially be forced into a situation to where they can only essentially show a front that's going to be effective in the running game. And while Jordan Matthews, I think, is a great long-term play, I don't think he's a guy who's going to come in and just make waves immediately in the passing game. And if this defense continues to look as poor as they've really shown in the preseason, we might see a lot of negative game scripts to where really this entire Bills defense or Bills offense just kind of falls apart. What are your thoughts on that, TJ?
My thoughts are pretty similar to yours. Even before all this movement, Shady, just because of his natural regression expectancy coming into the year, like you mentioned, especially with the touchdowns. He just scored way over expectation with his touchdowns. This offense without Greg Roman already probably wasn't going to be as run heavy. And just from a philosophical standpoint, after Le'Veon and David Johnson, I'm never too excited about spending high leverage picks on running backs anyway, especially in the leagues that I tend to play in, three wide receivers with one or two flex positions, PPR leagues. Just hard for me to justify a pick, on those running backs in the first round. But I kind of agree with everything you said. I have very similar concerns.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the RotoViz Report. Special thanks to our guest, TJ Hernandez. Be sure to follow him on Twitter, at TJ Hernandez. And please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on iTunes. For Heath Kruger, I'm Anthony Amico. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Report, powered by RotoViz Radio. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed, and be sure to contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio, and remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.